Hello and welcome to BoardWars.eu, your bi-weekly podcast about Star Wars Imperial Assault, a miniature game by Fantasy Flight Games. I'm Stefan, and with me today again is Herwig.
Hi, Stefan.
Did you play any games in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, finally we started our campaign of Imperial Assault.
And did you also play Skirmish, or didn't you play Skirmish this
week? Didn't manage to squeeze in a game of Skirmish, but I can try next week the Vessel version.
Yeah, I did last week, so I also uploaded a video, but more on that later. So, our topics today are, again, similar like last time. First, we have a short news section. Then we'll talk about our play experience over the past 2 weeks. Then, new in this edition, we have a lore section. And then we go on to card discussion, also new, where we discuss certain campaign and skirmish cards. Then we have our community stuff, our rules clarification, the lore question of the week, and then you are free to go if you're listening to the podcast. So, let's start with the news. The first news I have is that I got the email from Amazon DE, from the German subsidiary of Amazon, that the Ally and Villain packs will be shipped somewhere between, I think, the 21st and the 25th of April. So it's still, I think, 3 weeks out until I get mine.
Wow.
Yeah, they start shipping them, so it still takes like three business days usually to arrive at my door, so I don't expect to get them until the end of April, unless my local game store gets them first, and after which I would cancel the Amazon booking and just buy them there. But we'll see how this works. So you already got yours, right?
No, they're supposed to arrive tomorrow or on Monday.
How much did you pay after all?
You bought the
full first wave, right?
I bought the full first wave, two additional dice packs, because you never can have enough dice. So I don't know what I was thinking, but yeah, I think I just love dice.
I also bought two additional, so.
And I think sadly shipping plus taxes became then expensive and made it more expensive than 20-30 euros expensive than buying it here.
Yeah, because the sum of the first wave on Amazon is about 94 euros, right?
Yeah.
Right now, and I also bought two dice packs, but I bought them at my local game store because they already have them, and Amazon starts shipping the dice, I think, next week or early the next week after, I don't know. Currently, my order is at 94 euros plus the ones I ordered for the podcast. That's also not that cheap, actually. I think my local game store will have them sooner.
Yeah.
Not sooner. Cheaper, of course. Not sooner. I wish you have them sooner, but we'll see about that. So that's the status on the Ally and Villain packs in Europe. We are still a little bit behind from the US guys, but we'll manage, I think. So the next news item is the competitive season is now started. Actually, I think it already started at the 1st of March, from what I know, but there were not that many tournaments listed in the US, and now even tournaments in the EU start creeping up. And I dug up a link to the official list, the official tournament listing on the FFG page. Wait, I'll send you the direct link so you can also see this. And we have already listings for Europe. The listings are in Denmark, Poland, Spain, and Sweden. In Denmark, the next tournament will be held at the 3rd of May in Odense. Or Odense. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not from Denmark, so. And the venue is the Dragon's Lair. So if you're in Denmark, and you know the Dragon's Lair, or you're near Odense, however it's called, sorry, I don't know, then you should consider going there. If you're not competing, then at least watching the games or socializing with the guys. Then we have another tournament already having a date at the 15th of May in Sweden in Linköping at Pleoteket at Lincoln. I don't know where this is, but if you're near Linköping, you should also drop by there. The others There are some tournaments listed in Spain and Poland and another in Sweden. They don't have an oh, the Sweden one, the second Sweden one already have a has a
Has a date
date.
now, yeah.
I looked earlier today and it didn't have a date. So the second one is in Uppsala and it's at the end of June, at the 28th of June, at the Grand. I don't know where this is, but somewhere in Uppsala. So if you're in Uppsala at the end of June, drop by at the Grand. They'll host the Imperial Assault tournament. The others in Poland and Spain, they have no date yet, so I won't mention them here. Maybe they have a date next time, so we can mention them. And of course, I will drop the link to the list in the show notes, so you can look up the hosts and the venues for yourself and get a more complete picture about the tournament scene in Europe. The next issue I have on my news list is, yeah, I have listed the Equip Your Team article on FFG. I think this is already many weeks old, so we'll just let that slide. The dice packs are already available everywhere, I think now, because it's in Europe too. So usually we get them last, and when they crop up here, you can get them all over the world. One dice pack is about $10 or €10. I think at least one additional dice pack makes sense because there is an instance where you might need three green dice, because some of the characters in the campaign or the weapons in the campaign have two green dice to roll, and if you're focused with that character, you get another green dice, so you have three green dice, and in the base game you only get two ones, and so you'd have to note the outcome of the first roll, and then you have to reroll one, and if you have a reroll talent, then you have to reroll another one, and it's getting complicated with that. So at least one additional dice pack, if you can spare the $10 or €10, should be on your buy list.
There's one small update. Since today, the expansion for Imperial Assault, Twin Shadows, and the three hero and villain packs are now on the upcoming page. They haven't been
Really?
listed.
Because I looked yesterday and they
Yeah,
weren't
they're
on.
listed since today.
Oh.
Updated on the 2nd of April, 2015.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So this is just they are still not on the boat or so.
No, they're still in development, and there's
What are
still
the stages? Is it
developments and
development?
still. So
Then
it's
it's shipping, then it's on the boat or so or something like that.
development, printing, shipping, and distribution, and then finally the blue light when it's supposed to be in stores.
Yeah, so it's still not even printed, so it's still
Yeah.
some ways out.
Let's see how fast they are with this one. They said on the Gamma trade show that they expected to be released everything together at once, also the three character packs and the expansion in early summer. So I don't know what they mean
Whatever that
by
means.
whatever early summer means. For me, early summer is May. For other people, early summer could be June, so I have no idea.
What I also think about that somewhere in summer or in late summer, we should get a localized version for the games. So German, like Spanish, French, Polish, maybe. Maybe they even drop them together. I don't know. We'll see about that.
The German distributor Heidelberger Spiele likes to do this, to release a big bunch of their stuff together.
It's not good for your wallet, but it's good to feel good after the purchase. So, the next issue on your news list, the vessel plugin for Imperial Assault was updated to version 1.2, which includes all of the first wave stuff. So, but the tokens were already in there because the first wave doesn't have any units or tokens or figures that weren't in the base game, but all the new command cards, all the new deployment cards like Elite, Rebel Troopers, they are all in there. Connected to that, IA Command, like it's a community site for Imperial Assault, launched their vessel league yesterday. I think it's yesterday, right? The second, yeah. You can still sign up to the league even though it started, and it's an open league, so you just have a roster of players and you can challenge any player to play a game and then report the game in a specific thread on their forums, get listed, and you can win prizes, but they are not fixed now, and I don't think they said how long the league will run, but I think at least until the start of summer or maybe midsummer, until the next expansion and the Wave 2 stuff comes out. So if you're interested in playing the game online, look at the show notes. I'll link the Vessel 1.2 forum thread on BoardGameGeek and the IA Command forum thread for the Vessel League. So if you're interested in joining online games, you can do this. Then we'll quickly move on to our next segment, the campaign and skirmish play experiences. In the last 2 weeks, we'll start with you because you are you have probably the freshest memory of the campaign. I also played campaign, but only half a mission, but we'll come back to that later. So how did your first campaign session go?
I finally started with my friends from our Star Wars role-playing group. I convinced them to play Imperial Assault with me, which was not that hard.
Yeah, I imagined.
Yeah, we started our campaign. Sadly, in the last minute, one of my friends had urgent work thingy. So we had to continue compiling some videos and making stuff for a client. So we started the campaign with only three players, which is a very easy fix because you just deal out heroic awards and can continue play. So
you had three rebel players and one, and you were the Imperial player.
Yeah, I played the Imperium and we had three rebel players. The heroes were the lovely Wookiee, the smuggler, and the guy from Alderaan, the commando, the human commando.
Yeah, Gideon.
Gideon, the human commando.
We'll talk about the Wookiee and Gideon later in the episode.
We played Aftermath and...
Did you only play one mission or two missions?
Sadly, because it took us some time to... Although I knew the rules from Skirmish, but it's still... If you play with three people and it takes some time to get into the mindset of the game and so on. Next time, probably we'll maybe get... One mission, two missions, maybe, would be nice to finish.
How long did you play?
Well, we sat around a lot and talked about various other topics, so we really didn't have like a fixed game time, but I would say 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, that seems about right, yeah.
Yeah, for the first mission. But I think without the explaining and so on, and a little bit more disciplined gaming attitude, because gaming is not for fun, you have to do it.
Yeah. You have to accomplish something.
Yeah. We could be to get over a mission in 2 hours, I guess.
Yeah, that's I also thought that after the first few sessions, but I think it's rather optimistic right now, because you'll see when I tell about my session. So you opted to only include 3 rebel heroes and dish out the heroic awards, because there's also the option that the 3 players control another rebel hero.
Yeah, I think next time we will use this variant because. Although one player gets a double activation, I think with another hero it feels a little bit more rounded, because...
I played the first campaign with 3 heroes and there are some issues, but I'll talk about it later.
Probably next time we do that. Hopefully next time we will manage that we all 5 have the evening available to us, so nobody drops out short notice. So
you will just include the 4th guy...
Between the
missions.
Yeah, I think it's if you're not really complain a lot about him getting XP when he wasn't on the mission, that's the only thing you could complain about. Yeah.
The earned credits and the XP are the only thing that really matters. But you can, after the first mission, you can easily fix this. So it's not that big of a deal.
I think one of the problems is even if you... my heroes had real problems getting all the loot, all the crates for earning extra credits. Because if you only use 3 heroes, them, even if they have the heroic abilities and the extra activation... They still have to get to these crates. And I think 4 heroes can spread out more easily and get those crates than 3 heroes.
That's what I also noticed during my campaign.
Sorry, one more thing before I forget my train of thought. It was not that hard for me to really put damage on them. Because there are only 3 targets for me to hit, even if they all have 3 extra health. There is only one question I have. If they are flipped to the wounded side... Do they get the 3 extra heroic wounds again, or
yes.
So
the heroic
it's again.
Boost. The heroic boost applies to both sides of the hero sheets.
Okay, perfect. I couldn't find this yesterday.
I think it's nowhere in the rules, but I think Justin from FFG replied to a Board Game Geek thread back in January about this. So it's pretty clear.
I think it makes really sense. I think it's just something they didn't really emphasize that much because they thought it's logical. So. And the other thing I think I played wrong was Aftermath is already a threat 2 mission, right?
Yes.
Per every round, my threat dial would advance 2 points, right? Yeah, I overlooked that, but it's not that important in that mission, so I only...
You didn't advance the threat dial at all?
No, only per 1 point, so...
Oh, you couldn't spawn anything then.
I was really slow at spawning, and after the game I thought... Interesting, I thought that spawning always seemed to work much faster in the games I watched and so on, and the stuff I read about the rules, and then I realized, but still it was a close game, so...
It was still a close game?
Yeah, I was very close on having all three heroes on the wounded side, and also they just managed to destroy the last terminal in the last round, more or less with the last activation.
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I started my first campaign. What choice did you make for after the door opens at the end of the round? There's a choice to make. What did you choose?
So spoilers here for anybody yeah, who's listening.
Yeah.
So
we assume that everyone who listened to the podcast already has an idea of Aftermath.
And if there are some rival players out there, just put now your fingers in your ears and...
just don't listen. No, it's not that big of a deal. Because if you play just, it multiple times, you get all the choices. So what did you do?
I went for fortifying the terminals. And, yeah.
But that's the boring, the very boring choice.
I know. I don't know if I would take this choice again, but I think that's really what made it impossible for them to finally put enough blast damage on the terminals, because 7 health, I was lucky enough to have still some stormtroopers around, so I could put them adjacent to the terminal, so it got extra blocks.
It has 2 blocks instead of 1 another Imperial unit is adjacent to the terminal.
Already rolling against 2 blocks, then I used subversive tactics to cancel out the searchers, which really can be really annoying for the hero players.
I know.
And also, it's the same rule we always forget to use in Descent, that you can use the searchers or crits, how they're called in Descent, like the little thunder symbol, to get back endurance or stamina, like 1 point.
We also forgot this, but I also forgot to activate Show of Force for the first few missions. So it did. You will notice that maybe you also made some other mistakes that will drag down your performance. So I think even if players make mistakes during the first mission, it still managed to be pretty balanced.
Yeah, I think it's the first mission, and so... Of course, in every round you play with people, somebody's complaining that this is totally imbalanced and this is now totally overpowered.
I know.
Which is, I think, the typical discussion you have in any game nowadays.
Yeah, but from my experience, the missions, if both sides play to the full of their abilities, it's pretty balanced. Mainly, you notice that some missions are easier for one faction and one or the other. So it's overall, it's pretty balanced.
Yeah, but I think a lot of the small changes really factor into it, because my heroes weren't able to get a lot of money during this mission, so they were only able to afford like 1 equipment item.
How much did they get? Don't they get 200 for winning each?
No, 100. In the first mission, only 100.
That's bad, yeah. That's not
so
enough.
350, I think. I will read it up again if it was... If
wrong,
I
maybe
them,
award them additional credits.
Yeah, maybe they get some more money, but... and I think, like in Descent, getting good equipment or not really makes a big difference going along the campaign, because... Having the better weapon, doing more damage, really factors in over the length of a mission.
Yeah, but the first tier of upgrades the rebels can buy, some of them sound good, but they really aren't. That you most of them probably are sold back at a loss. You get only half the credits back you actually paid for them. So. Until the rebels at least go get to tier 2 upgrades, they are not that bad. They don't impact performance that much, from what I saw. So,
But yeah, it will be interesting to see how this will factor in or not.
So that your players won, so the rebels won.
Very closely, but yeah, the Rebels won. So the next mission will be a side mission, which we haven't chosen yet, but we will choose at the beginning of the next session. And hopefully until then, we already could include into the side mission deck some of the missions that are in the character pack in the small expansions.
That's what I said last time about that you can prepare the side mission deck after him, after Aftermath, because you don't really need it at first. You can do this after the first mission, after the action is done, so everyone can cool down and look at what's going on behind the scenes and in the campaign deck.
Yeah, I think it's not bad because if I would have done it before this mission and we would have spent time talking about the side mission deck, I don't know if it m would made any sense because it's some sense because it's something they can't really relate to at this point.
Yes, that's also. I don't know why they noted that you should build a side mission deck before, but I can see how it makes a difference after, like, if many expansions are out and you can build the side mission deck much more varied. You can after the first mission, you can choose after your performance which side missions to include and which not. I know this is an issue later, but if you only play the core box, you can really just m build the side deck. The side mission deck after
Because
the
there
first
are
mission.
only four green missions in there, so there's not really any way to choose which green missions to put in the side mission deck. For the gray missions, it's five, so only one
You discard only one from the core
is
box.
discarded. And the four character missions are the four characters you play, so.
Yes, so it doesn't make a difference. So it was a nice session, I gather.
Yeah, we really had enjoyed, and a good sign was that we really tried after we finished playing to find a day when we all have had time again. But
Do you play weekly or bi-weekly or?
we wanted to try more or less weekly. But next week, some of my friend, one of the my friends goes on holiday, and the week after, other guys on holiday. So.
Just like me.
Yeah, so they couldn't go on holiday in the same week. No, they had to go on different weeks. So yeah, so I think the 15th of April or something like that is our next day we can play, I think.
Yeah, but after that, the holidays will be over and you'll get a more regular schedule.
Yeah, and I think in May there are a lot of Thursday holidays, so maybe there's a way to play on Thursday or.
I was eyeing that too, to do an extended weekend session.
This year is a good May for having small holidays.
Yeah, for taking window days on Friday.
Yeah,
Okay,
exactly.
so I also played. I played two games, one skirmish game online. For the listeners, if you didn't already catch it on the Facebook page or on the web page, I'll also list it in the show notes. I played a game on Vassal, my first skirmish game, against some random guy that was online at the same time as me, and he just asked if I wanted to play, and I said yes. So I quickly prepared an army and a deck, so it went all right, I think. We both played our first skirmish game. He also played his first Imperial Assault game, so I had to help him with the rules. But I played I call them Royal Guard Champion and Friends, because it's the Royal Guard Champion plus three normal Royal Guards. And he played an assortment of Rebel heroes, and including the Saboteurs and the Rebel Troopers. So it was a close match, but in the end I won. Did you watch it online?
Yeah, I took the time, had a nice cup of coffee, and watched the game. Because I just had to watch it because I wanted to see how an all Royal Guard team would do.
It's actually quite nice. I made some tactical mistakes with positioning them after the first round, I think. They were quite big mistakes actually, because I wasn't able to benefit that much from their protector ability. But in the end it didn't matter, because the Royal Guard champion, he's like a powerhouse. If you manage to get into the action and you got pummel, you can wail away on even on rebel heroes and decimate them in one round. It's crazy. So I wasn't that I was successful. Let's say it this way. I was successful. So
Did we talk about this last time that this character was originally named after the character from the Crimson Empire books and
I don't know. I don't think we talked about
okay,
it.
and then they gave him the generic name because I think in the demo settings they had at Gen Con he still was called Jorah Dax or whatever the guy this character is called from the expanded universe from
It's
the
Crimson Empire,
Crimson
right?
Empire books, yeah. And I think they changed it now for the game because they want to phase out because it's one of the Dark Horse comic books and Dark Horse expanded universe character, so it was phased out his name. So I guess we could see some of the other expanded universe characters, and that's the thought I have had then. But then
But
they
maybe
will
they are just not
get
named or
exactly, they
have
will
other
get
names.
generic names. Like we could have Mara J, but she will be just called like Imperial Sith Assassin or something, yeah.
Sith assassin,
Yeah, something like that.
or we could get a villain like Thrawn, and
Yeah.
he will be a fleet commander.
He will be like that blue dude Admiral
The
Imperial
blue
Ad
dude admiral with the red eyes.
yeah. I think Chiss is the race called Chiss.
Who? Oh, I don't know.
I
I don't
think you can
remember
choose it in
actually.
you can choose this race in Star Wars ro role playing game and it's called a
Oh, okay.
Thith or something like that.
I have to look it up. It's been a long time since I read them. So the skirmish game I played, it went fine. We played it took us 2 hours and I cut most of it, so the video is actually only like 25 minutes long because I cut most of the boring stuff. Like we had some turns where or some activations where some of us made a mistake or played a wrong card that wasn't able, that he couldn't play. Like my opponent played Force Push, I think. That command card that allows you to push something and do damage or whatever. And but he wanted to play it with the Wookiee, so that doesn't work because the Wookiee is not a Force user. So stuff like this, and we had to roll back half an activation, and it was some of the time was spent like figuring out how to play the game. But the video itself, it should be fairly straightforward, and if you know the basic rules, it should give you an idea how to position guys and to how to judge line of sight and so. So it's you really should look at it. So after this, I didn't continue my spree on Vessel because I didn't have time, because Pillars of Eternity launched and I was sunk deep into that. But since my campaign group was meeting, when did we meet? On Tuesday, so 2 days ago, and we were playing that. I also played a campaign game, but we didn't actually manage to finish even one mission. We played, what did we play? Imperial Hospitality. It's the third, it's one of the two third campaign missions, the story missions, and it's about, what's it about? Yeah, the rebels have to rescue a prisoner from an Imperial facility, and before they rescue him, they can prevent the sending of some secrets the prisoner already told the Imperials to Coruscant by destroying a terminal. So they have to decide, do we want to rescue the prisoner first and skip the terminal and just take the hit, or do we try to destroy the terminal, maybe even get one guy wounded in the attempt, or even withdrawn, and then rescue the guy. My players chose to first attack the terminal, or just make their way to the terminal and attack it. And I actually, or we, I should say we, because I play with another friend, the Imperial player. We actually managed to completely kill. It's not kill. It's withdraw. Withdraw one of the heroes. And but the others are not wounded right now, so we broke the session after 4 rounds, which took us when did we meet? I think we played 2.5 hours for 4 rounds, and now the second part of the mission we postponed it until after Easter because it was getting late and we started at 7 p.m. and it was already like 11 or even 11:30, so we had to go home and sleep sleep a little bit because all of us had to work the next day. So we broke the mission in two parts, and we'll play again the week after
So
I
you
come back.
took pictures and or
Yeah, I always almost always take pictures. I will also upload pictures on the Facebook page from this session.
yeah, I wanted to take pictures too, but I totally forgot
Yeah,
which
I did also forget the first few missions, so no
so, but
worries.
next time we will I will make pictures.
Yeah, and I of course took pictures of our playing areas to we broke the mission at the start of the fifth round actually, and with all of our cards, like if they were exhausted or not exhausted and how much damage the cards had off, and I took pictures of all of the play areas, and I should be able to reconstruct it quite easily next time. So this was my play experience this week. Next time, I'll probably not get to do much. Maybe I can play Vessel in my holiday, but after that I only play maybe again one campaign game, and then that's it for the next 2 weeks. But we'll see. So that's it for this week's play experiences, and we'll move on to our next topic point, which is lore. And for lore this week, I started to read, actually not read, but to listen to the audiobook of the new Star Wars novel, Heir to the Empire. No, not Heir to the Empire. I always say Heir to the Empire. I don't know why. It's Heir to the Jedi, of course. So it's a book about it's a little bit backstory for Luke Skywalker. The book takes place, the story takes place in between Episode 4 and Episode 5, shortly, like must have been only a few weeks after the rebellion destroyed the first Death Star. And it's the story is actually, if you like the movies, the story is actually not that good for you, because I'm like a quarter through the book and there isn't any large scale action like in the Thrawn novels, the trilogy where Thrawn appears. You have these large scale space battles and battles on the ground, and this is all missing from the Heir to the Jedi, because it's a very personal story about Luke, and you follow him on some special assignments the Rebellion High Command gives him, and it's actually interesting from that perspective that he learns he doesn't actually know how to use the Force right now. He just know it's there and he can use it in some situations, but he can't really use it in another situation. So he's learning to get a grip on it and to really utilize it. And also it's lore building, because he's the first mission he takes is on Rodia, I think. And you get to know a little bit backstory about Rodians, and the second one is near the center of the galaxy, like on a moon with strange creatures. It's nice to listen to, and to I don't know how to read because I just bought the audiobook on Audible, and it's that the audiobook is very high quality. They have sound effects, they have dedicated speakers for, I think it's dedicated speakers for the characters, because they really sound very different and very accurate. I don't know, maybe it's just one guy imitating the speech. Could also be, I'm not good at detecting this. And but it's a very high production quality, and it lasts for 9.5 hours, which is actually quite long. So it's a good buy if you have an Audible subscription. It's just $10 or your usual subscription for the month, and it's I can't recommend it any higher, because if you're a Star Wars fan, you should read it.
And I think if you sign up to Audible, you get like two or three books for free, right?
No,
So,
you get one book for
oh,
free.
you get
You
one
get
for free, okay.
if you sign up for Audible, you get the first month for free. Each month you get a token you can pay one audiobook with. So each month you get a free audiobook, and for the first month you don't pay anything actually, and you still get the free token, so you can get one free audiobook, and after that you have to pay, like, it's nine euros or 10 euros per month. And you get one free audiobook per month. And of course, if you're subscribed, all audiobooks cost at most 10 euros or $10. So if you expect to buy many audiobooks, the subscription is very valuable because mostly audiobooks cost, like, especially the long ones, they cost like 20, 25, 30 euros. And with the subscription, you just pay 10. So it's done, and I just paid 10. It's okay. So it was an impulse buy.
Audible is really good if you have a longer way to commute to work. Audible is really just perfect for listening to audiobooks on your way to work.
Yeah, my commute is actually not that long because I only have to, like, it's like 25 minutes in one direction. That's quite short, but I still manage to get to through the books eventually. So I usually finish the monthly book before I get the next token, and so I end up buying additional books too. So but maybe I'm just an audiobook junkie. That might also factor in. Tying into that, we also have additional lore stuff this week, because I managed to look up at the 4th of September, there will be another novel released for the new canon especially, and it's called Star Wars Aftermath. It starts a few weeks after Return of the Jedi, finishes, of course, after the destruction of the second Death Star, and I think it bridges the gap between episode 6 and episode 7, so they timed their release to enable people to get into the mood of episode 7 just like 8 or 10 weeks before the movie hits, and I'll definitely get that one as soon as it releases and get through it on the audiobook, and of course report what I find in there here, but it's still quite a few months away, because we have 1, 2, 3, 4.
How many?
It's still
books,
like 5 months. Months
how many
away,
books
so.
Are planned to be released this year? I thought.
I only know of 2 ones.
Okay, I think I heard of about 6 or 8 novels something.
That's true. That's true. But the books, the actual books, are just 2 ones. The rest are comics.
Four
comics. Also, I don't know if I linked it last time. I will link this week in the show notes a YouTube channel called Star Wars Minutes, which releases three episodes a week of, like, an episode is like 1.5 minutes or 2-3 minutes long. And it talks about specific characters from the lore or upcoming releases. And it's a very good channel to stay informed about Star Wars stuff. So I will link it in the video description. And he also did a recent video about what was announced during March. And it included Aftermath, of course, which is the second novel this year, because Heir of the Jedi was released earlier. And the four comics that are scheduled to be released in the summer, I think, before Aftermath even. So I have to look it up. I'll put the link to the channel and to the March recap video in the show notes, so you can also look at this. But of course, Aftermath releases on the 4th of September. I advise all people interested in Star Wars to get it, and that's it for lore this week, I think. Yes. And we'll go on to our next topic, which is card discussion. For card discussion this week, we have I will try to split it into 2 parts each week. One part is for the campaign, one part is for the skirmish, so everyone who's playing gets a little bit out of it. And for the campaign this week, we will take a look at Gideon Argus, the commander type rebel hero, Garkan, the Wookiee rebel hero, and Military Might, the one of the 3 Imperial class decks. So let's start with Gideon Argus. I have his hero sheet here. He's a special character in that sense, because he doesn't actually is a damage. He isn't a damage dealer, but he also doesn't soak up that much damage. What he's good at, he can direct his allies to certain places, and he's like battlefield control or crowd control, because his first ability you get straight from the hero sheet is Command, which is a special action for 2 strain. Choose another friendly figure within 3 spaces. That figure may interrupt to either perform 1 move or 1 attack. So right off the bat, you can enable allies that already are in the, like, melee allies that are in surrounded with enemies and already use the activation, you can enable them to get another attack on the enemies adjacent to them. So this is a really good ability, and it we'll see later, it has a very good upgrade spec later on. So the second ability he has from his hero sheet, he's losing that on the wounded side, but normally he doesn't get wounded that easily, is disabling shot. While attacking with a ranged weapon, you gain surge stun. So if you roll a surge icon, you can always use that with Gideon to deliver a stun. This is I played against Gideon as Imperial player in my first campaign, and this stun ability didn't actually come into play that often because mainly other heroes are attacking. Because if he's on the battlefield, he tries to position himself to maximize his command ability, and he has to give up one of his activations to use command. And so he moves and use command, so there isn't much abilities left for him to attack actually. So the disabling shot, it's kind of a niche application, but yeah. So his first weapon he gets from straight off the out of the box is a holdout blaster. It attacks with a blue and a yellow die, so it has really low damage and has surge pierce 2, which helps it because the yellow die, if you don't know, yellow die is rolling the die with the most surges, and the blue die is the one with the most range, but both of them are ranked as lowest and second to lowest on damage, so you don't actually you can perfectly roll them without any damage on them, which is a shame actually.
I've seen
But with the Pierce
that.
2, it helps out.
I've seen this moment.
So one of your guys rolled zero damage.
Yeah, just a range
It's really
and searches. Yeah.
it's really bad. It's really bad. But like I said, he shouldn't actually do that much attacking. He should direct his allies to the mission objectives and maybe into the enemies so they can start hacking away with two activation with two of their actions. So he's a support, I would say he's a support character. So let's take a quick look at his ability. He's also, of course, his health is 10, his endurance is 5, which is good for a support character because he needs to strain often to use his abilities. And he has a speed of 4, and he has a black defense die, which is a liability because with 10 health and just a black defense die, he's really vulnerable. He's the only 10 health guy with just a black die and not a white die, which can actually completely evade an attack. So he's very, very squishy. For his ability deck, we have the first two abilities he has for 1 XP is military efficiency and called shot. Military efficiency, I don't think one of my guys ever used this or even bought this. It reads exhaust discard while attacking to convert one damage to one surge result. This strikes me as very it's the wrong play it's the wrong hero for this because he doesn't actually attack, so and even if he attacks, he usually doesn't have weapons that actually do that much damage, so you need the damage to actually
You really
pierce through
need
the
something.
defense.
He only carries a blaster rifle, so he can only get one modification on the blaster, or he.
This and so this the first part of military efficiency is not that good, and the second part reads exhaust that card while defending to convert one block result to one surge cancel result, which is also not that good because I mean you can he's rolling a black die which usually rolls high on blocks and low on surge cancels, but really canceling a surge from an enemy, that's it's a I wouldn't take this card. It's 1 XP, but it's not that good. The second 1 XP card is Call Shot, which is much better. Exhaust this card while you or a friendly figure is attacking. If the target is within your line of sight, apply +1 surge to the attack results. This is especially very good because you can give one surge result to an ally, which might even take more advantage of out of it than you can. So, for your first ability, you should use call shot. Really, it's it. There's no discussion here. And maybe military efficiency if you have 1 XP over for before the last mission. They don't know what to buy else. So I would shelf military efficiency and take college out for your first ability. Then you have for the second abilities, which are costing 2 XP now, you have Air of Command. Apply +1/+2 health to your hero, and when you use command, you may choose any friendly figure in your line of sight. This is if your group managed to score an ally and like a hero. No,
Yeah.
it's called just an ally,
Yeah, it
right?
could be
Like
the rebel
Han, Chewie.
trooper or the saboteurs
This
or
is not bad, but the other card is a bit better. I will go over that shortly. The +2 health to your hero, like I said, he's squishy to begin with, and the +2 hero, it doesn't help you that much, especially in the late game when the Imperial player puts on heat like crazy, and if he focus fires on you, the +2 health won't save you that often, if at all. So also skip Air of Command and take the next one, which is Mobile Tactician. It's 2 XP, and after you resolve command, gain 2 movement points. This is crazy good. This is crazy good because since you're basically using command every turn, or at least every other turn, you get +2 movement for free every turn or every other turn, which is very good. It's take this card. It's good. So this is your these are the two XP cards because you need to reposition yourself to take advantage of command. You need to be in the middle of your team, even if they are spread out. So these two movement points enable you to do that. The next two cards are Rallying Shout. Exhaust this card during your activation to choose another hero in your line of sight. That hero recovers 2 strain. This is good if you're playing against subversive tactics, but if you don't,
Don't tell them.
yeah, of course. It's good if you're playing against subversive tactics, but other than that, I wouldn't use it. Because you can't use it on yourself, and it's still, no, I wouldn't use it. It's 3 XP for a very, very niche card. Don't take this. It's funny because with Gideon, most of his XP level stuff is either a good card or a bad card, or a card that's very, very focused in one direction. But the other heroes mostly have cards that are good overall. For him, like Rallying Shout, I wouldn't take it. The next 3 XP card is For the Cause. It costs 1 strain and exhausts this card when another friendly figure within three spaces declares an attack. That figure becomes focused. I don't know. It's better than Rallying Shout, but it's still not that good. I would actually save the XP for both of the 4 XP cards. You will see why shortly. So you could make use of this, especially if you have like Diana in your team, which can remove defense die from an enemy. So if you remove a defense die from an enemy and then attack with plus a green die from the focused, it might tip the scales in your favor. But other than that, it's not that good of a card. So now we come to the two. I think they are the best abilities heroes have in the game in the core box, really. So the first one for 4 XP is Master Stroke. Exhaust this card after you resolve command. You may perform an additional command without using an action or suffering the strain cost. This is crazy good.
Oh,
This
that's
is
really good, yeah.
really. That's take this card. I'd say take 1 XP card, take 1 2 XP card, and then save up for at least this or the other 4 XP card. You will see why. And because it basically gives you one free action per turn. Each turn you take command, of course. And this is one action you get for free, for completely free. This is really good. So the next one is Hammer and Anvil. This is also really good. It's a special action for 2 strain. Choose another friendly figure. You and that figure may each perform an attack targeting the same figure. I think they forgot to say enemy figure, but since you can only attack enemy figures, it's all right. The target figure chooses the order in which these attacks resolve. This is important for the next sentence. During the second attack, remove all dice from the target's defense pool. So this is also crazy good. You can drop Vader, you can drop an AT-ST in one round with this, because you take another hero that's dealing high damage, and you use Hammond Anvil and say, we both attack the same target, like a beefy target, and the target can choose which of the attacks is undefended, and always the second one is undefended. Most of the time it will choose you, so it will choose the Gideon player to be the second attack, but that doesn't actually matter, because it's also a free another free action. Because with the action you pay, you still get to do an attack, and the other ally you choose also gets to do an attack. These cards give you two combined, give you two additional actions per round if you space it that way. It's great. So in this way, in the late game, Gideon Argus is a powerhouse. It was crazy what he can do. So Gideon Argus, he's a very good support character, and my advice for skilling him would be to get one of the 1xp cards, one of the 2xp cards, and then save for the 4xp cards, because they are just too good to pass on.
Yeah, I really hope my fourth player will pick him or the Jedi, because at this time I hope the Rebel team doesn't become like a all shooty and combat team. So it would be cool to have like some support character class in it.
You say that now, but after you get destroyed by Gideon, you'll think otherwise. I saw what he can do. It's really impressive. He can with his help, you can drop a whole room of Imperials in one round without any trouble. It's because the additional actions he gives out, you can focus the actions on one enemy. You can distribute it through all enemies. It's you get very flexible with that, and flexibility is a thing you really need in the last missions. So don't actually hope to take Peter because he's really good in the late game.
Yeah, let's see.
So the next hero we will review today is Garkan, the Fierce Warrior. Of course, he's a Wookiee. And he has the first ability he has on his hero sheet is Charge. It's a special action for 2 strain. Move a number of spaces up to your speed. Then you may perform an attack with a melee weapon. So this ability, most players actually play this wrong at first, because move a number of spaces up to your speed is actually counting spaces, so you can move through enemies and move through difficult terrain without paying additional movement points.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. Okay,
you can also use this to get to some mission objectives faster, because if something is blocking you, you can move through it without any trouble. You don't actually need to attack then. You're just standing next to the objective. So this has much utility. It's a bit costly with 2 strain, because Garkan has only 4 endurance. But it's a very good ability overall. And with its dual possibility, you can use it to get into melee range, and you can also use it to get out of melee range and to get 2 objectives. It's really good. So his second ability, which he loses after you turn over the sheet, is Rage. After an attack targeting you is resolved, you suffer 3 or more. If you've suffered 3 or more damage, you become focused. This is good, especially later on when you upgraded your health. I don't know, or especially good if you play with 3 or 2 rebel heroes, because you get more more uses out of Rage, because each time you get 3 or more damage during any one attack, you get defocused, and since you he defends with a black die, so this doesn't happen every attack, but basically every other attack. So if just 2 guys are attacking you, you get focused, you can spend the focus next round, and then you get focused again. So it's really good, but remember that he loses it when he's wounded.
Yeah, I think that's something we managed in our game like every round or so, because I just tried like put all my damage, all the blast damage on him. I just attacked the Wookiee with everything, and the downside of this was that in the next, on his next turn, he was focused again. So.
Yeah, I know. The counter strategy for this is to, as Imperial player, is to use a full round of your deployment cards to just attack the Wookiee, because he just can get one focused. If he's already focused, you don't get an additional focus token. So if he's already focused, additional damage you deal doesn't actually trigger rage. This is what I tried this in my first campaign, but like I said, we only had three rebel players, and he had the heroic card from begin with, so he had 17 health at the start, which is so much.
It took me
And
forever, and after 6 rounds, he was like only one blast, one damage away from being on the wounded side, but still it took me forever.
yeah, so rage is a good ability, and his stats are he has 14 health, 4 endurance. Just four speed, which is not that good for a melee char character, and he obviously defends with a black die. His first weapon is the Vibro X, which attacks with a red and a yellow die, and has Surge Pierce 1 and Surge Cleave 1. This is actually a very good combination. He doesn't have reach from the start, but the weapon, the Vibro Axe, is very good in a way, because the yellow die usually rolls at least one surge, so you can choose to either pierce through the defenses of one target or cleave to another target. This is very good against stormtroopers, I found out. Or you
But you
can
have
get
to be
another weapon like
careful not to forget that cleave doesn't give the second target any of the condition damage. So if the
Yeah, of
weapon
course.
has stun or something, he only gets the blast damage, not any conditions.
Yeah, that's one. I don't think we played it wrong, actually. But if you play against characters that can either cleave or blast, only the first target of the actual attack gets the condition triggered by any surge ability or any other abilities. The targets of the cleave or blast stuff, it's not an actual attack, because you can't defend against this damage, so the conditions don't carry over. There is one exception to this, and this is with Fenn Cygnus, the rebel, is it the rebel warrior or whatever he's called, which we'll discuss either next episode or the episode after. He has an experience point card that lets him actually dish out abilities. I think it's bleed or stun to all blast targets. This is very deadly, but we'll get to that later. So the Wookiee class cards are the first ones with for 1 XP are Wookiee Loyalty. Exhaust this card while you or an adjacent friendly figure is defending to apply +1 block to the defense results. This is actually very good, even from the start, because since you're standing in the front, you can shield another frontline character, or just use it to shield yourself. And shield yourself is very good, because you are defending with a black die, you can't evade completely, especially if you get attacked by an E-Web or something other that deals high damage. Wookiee Loyalty can save your skin. The second 1 XP card is Wookiee Fortitude. It's once drained to exhaust this card during your activation to either recover 2 damage or discard one of your conditions. This is also very good, because with this, the Imperial player can't reliably put conditions on you. So he has to make stick either bleed and stun, or risk that you just exhaust Wookiee Fortitude and go about your business. So both of these are very good to take, even if you plan to take other abilities later on. So the 2 XP cards are Staggering Blow. It's once drained to exhaust this card after you resolve an attack. If the target suffered 3 or more damage, it becomes stunned. Yeah, it looks good on the outside. But because you can resolve it, you can use it after the attack is resolved. You don't have to take the strain if you don't actually know if you deal enough damage. But This done, you also get this on weapons, and so it's kind of redundant in that way, because you can some of the I'd say close to half of the melee weapons in the game can dish out stun, so you don't need staggering blow actually. It's an okay card, but I wouldn't take it. So the second 2 XP card is Ferocity. When you declare an attack, while you are focused, add one red die to your attack pool instead of one green die. This attack also gains Surge Cleave 1. This is odd. I take this over Staggering Blow any day, because of your rage, you are focused quite often, and even if you don't, if you even if you aren't targeted by the Imperial player, if you have Gideon in your team, tell him to take the XP card to give you focused. You can substitute your green die with a red die, which deals much more damage. And you don't even need the range on the green die, because you're probably just in melee range anyway. So take Wookiee Fortitude, use it. It's a good ability. The free XP cards are Rampage. After you resolve Charge, each hostile figure adjacent to you suffers one damage. I wouldn't take it, because it's just one damage, and without a cleave weapon or without a ranged a reach weapon, it's yeah. You want to stay within the fight, but the charge stuff, you don't use charge that often to bull rush a group of enemies. So I wouldn't take Rampage. I never saw it in action, because my players actually didn't take it. They rather take Vicious Strike, the other XP card, free XP card. It's one strain. Use when you declare an attack with a melee weapon. Apply plus one damage to the attack results. This looks bad, but if you factor in that the one damage might pierce through the enemy defenses and enable you to actually apply some conditions, it's really good. So I'd take Vicious Strike over Rampage for the free XP cards, but like with Gideon, they aren't that impressive. You can take them, they are certainly better than Gideon's, but I'd save up for the 4 XP cards again, because the first 4 XP card is Brutal Cleave. One strain to exhaust this card after you resolve an attack with a melee weapon. Perform an additional attack targeting a different figure or object adjacent to the target of the first attack. So, this is very good, because it gives basically you get an additional attack, which is good. But you also, I did it in the rules clarification last time in the last podcast, I think. You can change weapons with this. So even if the target is out of your reach, but adjacent to the target you attacked first, you can change to a ranged weapon and just range blast the guy behind the first guy. So take Brutal Cleave. It's very good, because the additional attack for just one strain, it's powerful. It's a really powerful 4 XP card, like most 4 XP cards. The next 4 XP card, it's not that powerful, but it's also good. It's called Unstoppable. Apply plus one endurance and plus one speed to your hero. And while attacking, while you are wounded, apply plus one, plus two damage to your attack results. It's also very good, because if you stack it with Vicious Strike, you get plus three damage on your attack, which isn't that bad actually. If you combine it with Gideon's, is it Hammer and Anvil? I can't remember. Where you can remove the, yeah, Hammer and Anvil, where you can remove the one of the defense, not one of the defense dies from the enemy, but one attack is undefended. This can get very dangerous for the Imperial player. So save up for the 4 XP cards and use them. So, Herwig, did you have a Wookiee player in your?
Yeah.
Did he use his Vibrax to efficiency?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. he smashed the final terminal in the last round of the aftermath mission. So, yeah, and he could use Cleave, I think, in two or three instances.
Even if Aftermath is that small, because usually if you deploy Stormtroopers, he managed to get in there and use Cleave at least once or twice.
Yeah, he got into them. He was like the... he took the first activation and just like a Wookiee probably would ran into the first group and Stormtroopers and...
Exactly what happened in my first game. That's exactly starts, what...
started
probably
stealing
what everyone does.
Cleave damage and...
Yeah. So, the Wookiee is good. And especially if you play with just two or three Rebel heroes, he gets even better because his rage ability gets better the more health points he has. So
yeah,
keep that in mind. We'll move on to the Military Might Imperial class deck. And I will just talk about what I used during my campaign, and the others I will just read over and skip. The first card you get for free, even during Aftermath, the first mission,
yeah,
is Show of Force. Exhaust this card when an Imperial figure declares an attack. That figure becomes focused. This is very good for using with the EWEB in the first mission, if you have it. Because if the EWEB is focused, he gets to attack with four dice each. He gets one dice of each color, which is the rainbow attack, I think it's called, on the BGG's forums. Taste the rainbow. So you just exhaust your Show of Force, attack with the EWEB, and basically slaughter one of the targets.
Yeah, the EWEB gun can be so brutal, also because it can fire twice.
Yeah, it can fire twice. You can only use Show of Force once per round, but it's a... I think it's a little bit better than the card you get with Subversive Tactics, but the card you get with Subversive Tactics gets better later in the campaign, unlike Show of Force, which is getting weaker all the time because the heroes are getting like items that shield them from damage, and all you do with focus is just dealing damage. So Show of Force is good, especially early in the campaign, and especially with EWEBs or like Vader or other Imperial figures that can deal much damage with one blow, but it's getting weaker over the course of the campaign. So the 1 XP cards are Riot Granates, which I didn't take during my play. It's an attachment and trooper only, so you can only attach it to currently only Stormtroopers and EWEBs. With the first expansion, you can also apply it to Heavy Stormtroopers, but it's not out yet, so it's... It has a special ability, a special action. Exhaust this card to choose a space within three spaces. Each figure adjacent to that space tests sight. Each figure who fails suffers one strain. This I always thought this is a very bad card because the sight test, the heroes take their hero sheet, and on the bottom right you have three categories, which are, I think, Force, Sight, and Engineering. And each of them rolls the dice listed there. And if they roll at least one surge, they are spared from this strain. And it's also just giving one strain. I don't think it's that good. I'd say skip it. So the next one is Combat Medic, which I also didn't choose early in the campaign, but later on. It's spend one threat to exhaust this card at the end of a trooper's activation. That figure and each adjacent Imperial figure recovers 2 damage. I got it, but I think I used it once. And it's better early in the campaign when you have wounded Stormtroopers, like normal or Elite Stormtroopers, and you want to heal the whole group. But it's costing one threat, which is rare early in the campaign. So I think it's also a bad card, because... It's bad early in the game because you can't afford it, and it's bad later in the game because it doesn't change much. So I'd say skip both the 2 XP cards. The 1 XP card, sorry. The 2 XP cards, on the other hand, are a bit better. The first one is Assault Armor. It's an attachment that confers +2 health to all of the figures contained in this deployment card, or deployment group, whatever you want to call it. So if you slap it on regular Stormtroopers, they have each 5 health, which is very nice. And also it enables you to exhaust this card while defending to reroll 1 black die. This is good, especially also on Vader, because you can drive his defense roll into crazy combinations with this. But in the end, you have to take it, because later in the campaign, the rebels can dish out so much damage, you need this additional 2 health. I'd say save up for 2 XP for assault armor first, and then skip the next card, because it's also for 2 XP, it's endless ranks. When you deploy a trooper, reduce its deployment cost by 1. This sounds good, but it's actually not that good. I thought this also applies to reinforcing troopers. So if you play a regular stormtrooper and you reinforce usually for 2 threat, you get to reinforce for 1 threat. But of course, this doesn't happen, because this is just when you deploy the trooper. So all this does is, if you deploy a regular stormtrooper, you have to pay 5 threat instead of 6. If you deploy elite stormtroopers, you have to spend 8 threat instead of 9. And if you deploy E-webs, you also get reduced. The cost is basically just reduced by 1. And this is...
Cards like this only are useful if you get them really early in the campaign. Then maybe they would pay off. No, but
even then, I would skip it, because...
Yeah, you're probably right.
The five threat, the reduction for the regular stormtroopers is from 6 to 5. And remember, over the campaign progression, you get threat level 5, like after the third story mission, which is much too late to actually use this effectively. So I'd say skip endless ranks. I bought it in my first campaign and it was utterly useless. It wasn't that extremely useless, but it was very near extremely useless. So skip it. The next ones are sustained fire for 3 XP. Exhaust this card after an Imperial figure resolves an attack. That figure performs an additional attack. Then that figure becomes stunned. This is only really useful for E-webs. You can attack 3 times around with an E-web. You can maybe take down a Wookiee or not. I don't know, but it's
depending on your.
Otherwise,
luck,
it reads good, but it's not that good actually.
Yeah,
because you get stunned afterwards, and
you can use it on stormtroopers, because being stunned only means you lose 1 activation, and they can fire anyway only once. So
yeah, but if remember. This only works for 1 figure, because it's just for 1 attack. With stormtroopers, their attack is too weak and late in the game to actually matter. And with 3 XP, you can't afford it much earlier. So, like I said, if you plan to use E-webs much, you should get this card, because when the E-web is attacking 3 times a round, he has done his duty. Even if he's getting attacked and killed in the next round, he has probably done like 12, 15 damage in that round. And for this, it's not that bad. But if you don't like to use E-webs, skip this card. The next 3 XP card is Shock Troopers. While an Imperial Trooper is attacking a figure within 2 spaces, apply 1 surge to the attack results. This is not that bad, especially for like... if you use it with a Nexu, with a regular Nexu, or like with a Imperial Droid who have 2 or 3 surge abilities, but don't have the die to actually use them all the time. It's a good card to make you use the surge abilities.
Yeah,
but
I can see that.
Also,
yeah,
it's getting weaker with the campaign progression. So I don't know. It's better. I think it's better than sustained fire. You should take this over sustained fire, but also it's not a good card, if you ask me. Then we get to the 4 XP cards, which are both much better than the other cards from Military Might. The first 4 XP card is Combat Veterans. It's an attachment for troopers only while defending. Apply +1 block to the defense results. And additionally, while attacking, apply +2 accuracy and +1 damage to the attack results. This is very good. Take it, slap it onto Elite Stormtroopers and be done with it, because they are crazy good then.
Yeah.
If you combine it with Assault Armor, which you can, then you get, like, it's +2 blocks, right? Let's see. Assault Armor. No, it's... you get the reroll of the black die, and +1 block out of the box, and +2. So your stormtroopers basically become elite stormtroopers for free. You have to buy the XP cards, but it's for free. So the next 4 XP card, which is also good. At the end of each round, place one strain token on this card. Then you may spend one threat to place an additional strain token on this card. Now you're asking, what's this card all about? I put tokens on it, and of course this card continues on the second part. When an Imperial figure declares an attack, you may discard one strain token from this card to apply plus one damage to the attack result. Limit once per attack. So it's basically you can boost your attacks, your attack damage each round. And I didn't actually use this card, but I think it can be good if you play with units that deal less damage but have many surge results.
Yeah,
so you can trigger them. I didn't actually use it. I can see it being good, but Combat Veterans is for sure the better card. So if you spend 4 XP, I'd say take Combat Veterans first. That's it for Military Might.
Should we explain how attachment works with a class
card? Yeah, of course, attachments. Attachments for the Imperial player work like if you deploy a unit on the field, you can just place an attachment card on the deployment card of this unit, and all of the effects the attachment gives are applied to all of the figures of this deployment card. I actually thought
and
that you can't...
Also, the important thing is if this group is wiped out...
Yeah, if the group is defeated, you get to regain the attachment and play it on another card you deploy. So, what I didn't know is that you can also do this at the start of the mission, because the initial groups, they actually get deployed.
Ah,
so you can
important to know, yeah.
Yeah, you can just put attachments on them at the start of the mission, and if they are defeated, you can put it on the next figure you deploy, the next deployment card you deploy. So it's good to know that, because for half my last campaign, I thought you can't put attachment on initial groups, which stifled me quite a bit.
Yeah, I can imagine. But these are these typical errors you make in your first campaign.
Yeah, my first campaign was horrible. I don't even want to talk about it. I lost the last mission in eight rounds, and it has a round limit of 12. So they finished the last campaign mission like 4 rounds earlier.
So
it wasn't even close.
This podcast is mainly a therapy session for you to forget your first campaign.
I see it the same way. In the second campaign now, I fare much better. Not only because I chose a different class deck, I actually think the subversive tactics is much better than Military Might. And if you're starting out, you should take subversive tactics, because the cards, they are useful in the beginning and they stay useful at the end and get even more powerful at the end.
Yeah,
unlike many of the cards with Military Might, which are either good in the beginning and bad at the end, or the other way around.
They're entertainingly painful, but the important thing is with subversive tactics, you really have to watch what your rebel heroes are doing. You always have to think about if it's a right moment to use your subversive abilities or not. So you're much more, maybe you're much more focused or much more into the game with these cards.
You have to be aware of what the rebel heroes actually can do with their abilities.
Yeah, exactly.
To best use your subversive tactics cards, which isn't the case with Military Might. Military Might is good if you are starting Imperial player like me.
Yeah.
Like I was in the first campaign. They are straightforward, the cards. You just play them and they give you bonuses and they give you additional attacks or additional
to some groups
dice.
And boom, you're gone. Good to go.
And with subversive tactics, it's really, it depends on the player. If the player knows what the rebels can do, it's deadly. But if you don't know what the rebels are capable of, you misplay most of the cards and they are much weaker than you actually expect. We finished our campaign class discussion, campaign card discussion, of course. And it was a bit long, but we'll just go over the skirmish card discussion, which is just 4 skirmish cards today. And the first card I want to talk about is Urgency. It's a skirmish card for a cost of 0. Remember, for building the skirmish deck, you can only include cards up to a total of 15 cost. The cost is down in the left bottom in the white circle, and urgency does cost 0, but it's also limited to one per what's it called, command deck. Yeah, it's one per command deck. So urgency, you can use it for any figure, and it's a special action. Gain a number of movement points equal to your speed plus 2. So it's essentially a move action, but a faster move action. What you can do with this is, if you have, like I played in the vessel game I played, it was smuggled goods, I think, the skirmish mission, and you have to retrieve crates from throughout the map and haul them back to your deployment zone. And with this, you can haul them faster because the crates slow you down and you get minus 2 mobility and whatever. And with this, you can actually counteract this. And yeah, and haul the crates faster to your deployment zone to free up the figures and use them in the fight. So urgency is good if you have to get to some location on the map, but otherwise it's, for most skirmish missions, I think it's not that good. The next card is good in, depending on your unit composition, of course, it's Pummel. And for any figure, it's a special action. Actually, it's two special actions. If you have the melee attack type, perform 2 attacks. So it's a way to get 2 attacks per round with a in skirmish mode, which is actually not that common outside of the EWAP. And this enables you to do this. If you play Vader or the Royal Guard champion, this card is key. You have to include this card, and you can. It costs 1, and you can include 2 per command deck. If you play Vader or Royal Guard champion, or maybe even many Royal Guard units, then you should take Pummel to make use of it during the mission, because 2 attacks in 1 round sounds like not that much of a difference, but it's a real big difference actually. So 2 cards to go. The next one is Guardian Stance.
But the 2 skill symbol on the Pummel card means that you use up 2 of your both
of
your
course.
Activations.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like I said, it's 2 special actions. You have to use 2 actions to actually use it, and you get no further actions during that round. But you can attack twice. So it's basically you trade your ability to move for a second attack, like the rebels can in the campaign.
Yeah,
and you of course have to use the card for it. So you have to play the card, and it's gone then, and so you can only use it once or twice if you draw the second card per mission. But it's really good. So you should take it. The next card is Guardian Stance, and you can only use it with deployment cards that have the keywords Guardian on them, like the Royal Guards or the Royal Guard Champion. Or are there any others? I don't think so. Only these 2 deployment cards have Guardian on them.
I think so, yeah.
Use while an adjacent friendly figure is defending. Reroll 1 or more attack or defense die. Attack or defense. Do I read that right? Reroll 1 or more attack or defense die. Yeah. So what happens is you can reroll the attack die or all attack dies, and you can reroll your defense die. 1 or more attack or defense die. But you can only reroll either the attack or defense dies. So depending on if the enemy rolled high and you rolled low, you should take one of the 2. Usually it's better to reroll the attack die, because especially if there's a red die involved, and the red die fell on the 3. So I took it to, I used it once in my game and used it to reroll the red die from the enemy. And I rolled from 3 to 3, so it didn't actually do anything for me, but it's a good card. You should include it if you play the Royal Guard champion and or the regular Royal Guards. The last card we talk about today is Fleet Footed. It's any figure and used during your activation to gain 1 movement point. It's similar to urgency, but it's not a special action, and because the difference to urgency is, urgency you have to use the move the moment you use the card. So you can't actually play it. You can't. I don't think you can. You can. Wait. You should be able to stand still and attack. Oh, I don't know. Gain number of movement points. No. Okay, no. Like I said, if you gain movement points during a special action, you have to use them immediately, or they just discard. So for urgency, if you use it and move only up to your movement point, you actually use the card because you don't even took advantage. You didn't even took advantage of the +2 movement speed, and the card is still gone, and the additional movement points are still gone. You can't save them up for the for getting away after an attack, let's say. But with fleet-footed, you gain it. You gain one additional movement point, but it's not a special action. You just gain it flat. You can just use the additional movement point any when during your activation, which is different from urgency, because urgency you really have to play it when you're using the move, and not before or after. Or you can't stand still and attack during the move. It's complicated like that. So I'd say if you play the squad I played during my vessel game, with like I had four deployment cards and all of them were melee, you need both of these cards, and you need to include them both to actually get to the enemy and or get away from the enemy. This mobility you really desperately need with melee characters, and you should include it. So that's card discussion for today. Let's see. Yeah, the episode is quite long today, but we have time. I think we'll talk about subversive tactics next week, so we can both share our input. And you have to send me your hero list, so we can include heroes next week that you actually have experience with. So it's a little bit less one-sided. So card discussion is over. On to our next topic, which is community stuff. This week for community stuff, I want to highlight a special thread on Board Game Geeks, which is the unspecified BGG rules thread. So this is a thread where two of the Board Game Geeks members compile a list of currently of rules that are currently like viewed as ambiguous or not cleared up by FFG. So if you want to avoid falling into traps with rules, click this link. Of course, I'll include it in the show notes. Click this link, read through the thread once, and they also remove rules that were ambiguous but were cleared up with the first FAQ, or of course with subsequent FAQs. So, like, what do we have? One of the rules that isn't clear right now is the timing of blast and cleave happening after attacks are resolved are mentioned in the reference card, but not in the blast and cleave sections of the RRG. So this means that if the timing isn't stated on the card, the timing is actually not stated at all. You don't know when the cleave and when the blast happens. So they also include always a link to another forum thread on BGG where this rule is actually discussed. So if you want to strengthen your rules, your ability to know the rules in Imperial Assault, you should visit this thread. The thread, it's a great resource to not fall into any pitfalls of the rules. That's it for community stuff today. I actually wanted to include the. Do you want to include something else?
Problem is, this thing I would point to is already happened after this podcast is posted tomorrow. The guys from Dice Tower are having a live play of Imperial Assault, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can. I will actually include the link. Is it on Twitch or is it on YouTube?
I think it's on YouTube, maybe also on Twitch. I don't know which they're using main,
Okay,
which.
we'll do it this way, because I will include the link to the live play of the Dice Tower guys in the show notes, because the podcast won't be going up until like midnight next week, because I
Yeah,
can't cut it. I can't edit
it's
during the
clearly.
weekend.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah.
So The Dice Tower live play will have happened by then, and
Yeah.
we will include a link to the video in the show notes so you can see the Dice Tower guys play Imperial Assault. So that's it for community stuff this week. So the next topic is rules clarification. This week we have the Rebel Trooper's aim ability, and I have to look up the thread actually because I can't remember what the discussion was about. The Rebel Trooper's aim ability states if you have not exited your space during this activation, apply plus one damage and plus two accuracy to your attack results. There is I think I did it wrong because if you with Gideon, if you enable the rebel one of the rebel troopers to gain an additional attack, it's not you have to take care. You have to look at if Gideon moved before he used command to give the additional attack to the rebel trooper because it states if you have not exited your space during this activation. This actually applies to Gideon if he uses command on the rebel trooper. It's a bit complicated, and it's not that. It's actually a bit bad, I think, because thematically it should apply from the Rebel Troopers' movement and not from Gideon's movement. But the way it is written and the way it's interpreted right now is, if Gideon didn't move before giving the command action, you benefit from the aim ability. If he did move before using command, you don't actually get the aim bonus and the damage bonus when you attack with the Rebel Trooper during the command. So, to clear up this, this is also, of course, this also applies to skirmish. So, if you play skirmish with the Rebel Troopers, you also only benefit from aim if you don't have to move first. So, you have to take care of this. This is rules clarification for this week. And on to our next topic, which is lore question of the week. So, last week we asked, what did you ask last week? I can't remember. Oh, of course, we asked the ship, Leia's ship in episode 4. Did you know the answer right off the bat, or
That's the 10th4.
did you know it, or did you have to look it up?
No, I know it, but only because I know it from the X-Wing game, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's of course it's a ship you can buy with the X-Wing game.
And it was in the original sketches by Ralph McQuarrie. It was the first design for the Millennium Falcon, actually.
Oh, that's
And then
interesting.
they switched them, so it was in a if you buy in the comic book, which came out last year by Dark Horse, where they used the McQuarrie concepts and the first version, the first draft of the script. Yeah, there you see still like the Tantive IV as the Millennium Falcon. Also, Han Solo is still a lizard, so
Yeah, I noticed.
it's pretty funny and.
I saw a concept drawing of him as a
Yeah.
lizard. It's funny to look at.
And all the stormtroopers have lightsabers, and yeah, it's very, very different. And look, it feels more like a glorified Flash Gordon episode or a Flash Gordon movie than
Than Star
the
Wars, yeah.
way Star Wars felt in the first movie, yeah.
Yeah. So the answer to last week's question, of course, was Tentive 5. No, 4, of course.
10th4.
24. And I had one of the listeners replying to the question or answering the question actually said, apparently Extended Universe lore claims that it was originally called the Star of Alderaan and was later renamed in honor of a bunch of ambassadors from the fourth planet of Tantive. I don't know if this is true. This is true. If you know this and you're a listener, send in a link or whatever you can find to clear this up, but
Yeah, it sounds like.
that's the first time I heard from the of this.
Yeah, but it sounds like this typical expanded universe footnote stuff. When they suddenly explain the name of a ship over a whole page or something like that.
Okay, so we have We had four right answers this week, which are Ash, Mark, James, and Chris. And we actually had one wrong answer, and this was Sam. He didn't actually answer wrong, but he answered the question of episode one, even though he sent in his reply like almost a week after episode two hit. I sent him an email saying that the raffle for the first episode is already closed and the second one is still open, but he didn't reply with the right answer for the second episode, so he's not in for the raffle this week. Maybe he can manage it next week. So the four guys this week are Ash, Mark, James, and Chris, and I will, of course, with again visit random.org, generate a number between 1 and 4, if the site will load, actually. Yes. Okay. Random number between 1 and 4, and the answer is 2. The second one is Mark A. Goforth. I hope I pronounced it right. Mark, you won a Han Solo ally pack. I will write you in the next few days and ask you for your contact details so I can send you the ally pack when I actually get them, which will still take a few more weeks, but I will get them and I will send them out. So for this week, the question of the week is, which silicon-based life form attacked the Millennium Falcon in the asteroid belt during the Empire Strikes Back? This should be very easy if you watch the movie. And the prize this week is Rebel Saboteurs Ally Pack. The deadline is the 15th of April, because the recording for the next episode is scheduled for the 16th of April. But maybe we will actually delay this. And if we will delay the recording of the next episode, I will tack on time for this week's lore question, so you can send in your answers later too. But if you know it now, send it in before the 15th. So the question again, which silicon-based life form attacked the Millennium Falcon in the asteroid belt during The Empire Strikes Back? There's a small hint to this. They are ugly. you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, of course.
Of course. It's easy. So this is the lore question of the week. This concludes our show for this week. And we will see you all again in roughly 2 weeks, I'd say. And if you want to contact us, you can do it on Facebook. I will include the link to the Facebook page in the show notes, like always. You can also visit the website boardwars.eu or www.boardwars.eu. Which I use to not only post the podcast, but also keep you updated with the production of the podcast and with random stuff happening around Imperial Assault. Or if you don't want to use these two methods, you can also send us an email to podcast@boardwars.eu or to me directly, stefan@boardwars.eu. Stefan, of course, with a PH. So take care of that. And if you want to come on the show and talk with us about Imperial Assault and you're from Europe, because the time zone probably won't allow anyone else, you're happily to send us an email or contact us on Facebook so we can tell you about the production for the next episode and maybe bring you on the show. So that's it for this week. Any closing comments from Herrick?
No, also still waiting for my Heroes and Villain packs. So finally getting started to paint them.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about painting this week, but we
can
suspect
do next
we will
time.
We will talk about this next time when you have your packs ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe I can make some pictures of my painted minis for the Facebook
site. Yeah, and
put them
on the Facebook site, of course, yeah. So, that's it for this week, and we will see you about next time in about 2 weeks. Bye, guys.
Bye.